Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you so much, Regina, and I too would like to welcome everyone to our today's Cancer Care Connect Education Workshop, Liver Cancer Treatment Update. Today's program is supported by Exelixis, Inc., and I really want to thank them for their support of this program today. A lot of participants on the call today, over 100 participants on the call today from all over the United States, from both urban, rural, frontier, and suburban communities. And we also have international participants from Iraq, Pakistan, and the United Kingdom. So it's a global call as well. And we're delighted to have all of you on the call today. And now it's my pleasure to introduce our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Ahmad Kassab, and Dr. Kassab is the John E. and Dorothy J. Harris Professorship in Gastrointestinal Cancer Research, tenured professor and director, the Hepatocellular Carcinoma Program, director MD Anderson HCC SPOR, editor-in-chief Journal of Hepatocellular Carcinoma, Department of Gastrointestinal Medical Oncology, the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. And Dr. Kassab will be addressing an overview of liver cancer in the context of COVID, Omicron, seasonal flu and allergies, current standard of care and new treatment approaches, the role of radioimmunization, and updates from ASCO on the treatment of liver cancer. It's really my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Kassab.
Thank you, Carolyn, and hello, everyone from everywhere. It's an honor to be with you, and today I'm going to be talking to you about important topics to you and your families. So the first one is looking into the overview of liver cancer in the context of seasonal allergies, seasonal flu, COVID infections with different variants. So this is a general topic for any patient with cancer or chronic disease, meaning that we always encourage our patients to be cognizant and make sure that they are up to date in terms of vaccination, also in terms of preventive strategies. So the general recommendations for any of our patients, given the fact that most of our patients have lower immunity because of the cancer itself or because of the treatment we do to treat the cancer. So in general, we advise our patients to abide by the local guidelines for screening and preventive services, getting vaccinated on time and updated vaccinations whenever available. So these are very, very specific general recommendations, and we always are very, very cognizant about if our patients have had issues with delay of their treatment, for example, due to any infection or due to any local restrictions for travel, to stay tuned and be very close to their physicians and their teams to follow their recommendations in terms of restaging scans, for example, for those patients on active treatment or follow-up scans for patients who finish their treatment. So this is very important and very relevant to the time that we live in. Moving on to the current standard of care in terms of liver cancer, hepatocellular carcinoma in particular, and new treatment approaches. So since we spoke last time, there have been some new development in treatment of liver cancer. So the frontline treatment, we always ask the question, are we up against a patient with two disease status, what we call it, meaning that the patient has liver cancer tumors and in addition to that they have underlying scarring tissue or what we call cirrhosis. If the answer is yes and the cirrhosis is advanced, then the next step is we look into the treatment size and number. So if the patients have hepatocellular carcinoma and advanced scarring scarring tissue on their liver that would preclude them from having any kind of surgery, then we look into transplant option for those patients with a very small limited disease, meaning if it is one tumor up to 5 centimeter in diameter or 3 tumors up to 3 centimeter each, then they could have room for evaluation for liver transplant. And of course, transplant takes time, so in the meantime, we do what we call bridging therapy to transplant, meaning that we treat them while they're waiting the liver transplant. And the reason why we stick with those very small tumor parameters is the fact that patients beyond those parameters, for example, a tumor that is more than 5 centimeters, or instead of 3 tumors, 4 or more, these patients are at high risk for recurrence after transplant, especially because they have, they will be on immune suppressive medications and the cancer could come back and become more aggressive. Now, how about those patients with liver cancer, advanced cirrhosis, but they are not candidates for liver transplant because of the size or number of tumors? And then the next option is looking into localized therapy approaches. And by that, we mean either ablation, which is burning those tumors by heat, which we call radio frequency ablation, or cold, which we call cryoablation by freezing them. For example, so there are different modalities for the ablation, and also alcohol ablation. All of that will be depending on the location. For example, if it is under the surface of the liver, it could rupture if we do heat ablation. That's why we go for alcohol ablation, for example. Also, the proximity to any large blood vessel or bile duct. So these are technical issues related to the procedure itself. And then if the tumor is larger than 3 centimeter in diameter, we don't like to do ablation, and we like to do what we call TACE, transarterial chemoembolization, TACE. And that's basically coming up from the groin area, like having a hard cath with a catheter, and then we go up to the liver, inject the tumors with chemotherapy, take the catheter out as outpatient, and we do that for tumors up to 5 to 7 centimeter in diameter, because if they are larger than this, patients could suffer from post-procedure complications. And tumors beyond that, large tumors beyond 7 centimeters, then we go for what we call radioembolization. So it's exactly like TACE procedure, but instead of injecting chemotherapy through the catheter, we inject radiation spheres. That's why we call it radioembolization. So patients tolerate this much better if the tumors are large or spread out through the liver. Radioembolization is more tolerable, and it's very specific therapy with a catheter to the tumors directly. And finally, if the tumors are beyond the liver, so we cannot do any transplant, we cannot do any localized therapy, and the tumors are metastatic to lymph nodes or outside the liver, then we have to go with what we call systemic therapy, meaning something by mouth or vein, so that way they go where blood goes. And I'm going to summarize this in a second. How about patients with hepatocellular carcinoma, but they don't have any evidence of scarring tissue in their liver? They don't have any cirrhosis. In these cases, there is room for resection, cutting the tumors out. And that will depend on the location of the tumors, of course, technicality of it, discussion with the surgeon. And in general, the tumors have to be limited to one lobe of the liver to minimize the risk of.
And our next speaker is Dr. James Harding, Assistant Attending Gastrointestinal Oncology Service, Early Drug Development Service, Department of Medicine, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, Assistant Professor of Medicine, Weill Cornell Medical College. And Dr. Harding will be addressing clinical trials, how research increases your treatment options, preventing and managing treatment side effects, symptoms, discomfort, pain, and quality of life concerns. Guidelines to prepare for telehealth, telemedicine appointments, including technology, prepared list of questions, follow-up appointments, and discussion of open notes. It's my pleasure now to turn this over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Harding.
Thank you. This is Jim Harding. I appreciate the invitation to speak today, the attention of the audience, and cancer care in general for providing these excellent venues to reach out to patients. Dr. Kassab, as we saw, I think had some issue with the phone. Just to pick up a little bit on where he left off, you know, the other main mechanism of treating liver cancer is systemic therapy or medicinal therapy. These are either oral medications or intravenous medications, medicines that go in by vein, that help treat liver cancer when it is spread within the liver and transplant or regional therapy is not possible or surgery is not possible, or if it has spread beyond the liver. And over the last decade, there has been an explosion in therapy for the treatment of advanced liver cancer, as it is called. The frontline therapy is with combination immunotherapy, either with the drugs atezolizumab and bevacizumab, or durvalumab and tremelimumab. These are just two examples of combined immunotherapy. Additionally, there are pill-based therapies called tyrosine kinase inhibitors, naming a few like lenvatinib, sorafenib, and cabozantinib. The focus of this is not to talk about how do we use them or sequence in them, just to let you know that these exist and are the backbone of treatment for patients with advanced disease and are now being explored at earlier stages of disease. How did these therapies come into use? They came into use via clinical trials. And there are two general types of clinical trials. One is called a therapeutic clinical trial, where a patient may receive a treatment. The other is called a non-therapeutic clinical trial, where patients will enroll and usually provide information, either being it in questionnaires or through blood samples, registries, or even tumor samples, so that doctors and investigators may learn more about liver cancer. So non-therapeutic studies might be, how does this particular therapy make you feel? And you might be asked to fill out questionnaires about it. Or would you allow us a piece of tissue that we can bring to the lab to understand how liver cancer grows? Therapeutic studies is how we develop new therapies for liver cancer. A phase one clinical study is when we are looking at a new drug for cancer. We know that it will work for liver cancer in models of cancer, it will work in cultures of cancer, but we don't know how it works or operates in humans. And so a phase one study is the first time that molecule or a combination is used to give the potential for a new therapy. The phase one's purpose is to find out what is the right dose for my cancer. A phase two trial is generally once we know a dose is safe or tolerable, and now we want to see how much activity is there. Can it shrink tumors? Does it change the course of the disease? And then the phase three is when the new therapy, which we now know is safe and has some activity, is now compared to a standard of care. So, for example, the old standard of care used to be a pill called sorafenib. What allowed now immunotherapies to be the established therapy in liver cancer is really phase one showing that they were safe, phase two showing that they were effective, and then a phase three where patients got either that combination or the older drug, sorafenib, and it was proven in testing this way that this combination was better. So right now across America and across the globe, there are a number of phase one, two, and three studies that are ongoing for liver cancer. In the United States, phase one studies are now looking at new molecules that will help enhance the immune response against cancer. These could be small molecules or what are called bispecific antibodies, as well as vaccines and cellular therapies. Phase twos are happening when these studies have been shown to be safe and some effect. Phase threes are really looking at new combinations, and there are a few phase three studies still ongoing in liver cancer, exploring novel immunotherapies, particularly one targeting TIGIT. And there are also phase three studies looking at patients that have progressed on immunotherapy and how might we treat them? Should we continue immunotherapy and add something to it, or do we just move to a pill-based approach? In addition to this, we are seeing that these established therapies like atezolizumab and bevacizumab or durvalumab and tremelimumab are being assessed on phase 3 studies in conjunction with regional therapy and at earlier stages of disease. And so the trial space is very active, and we see a lot of movement going forward in this space. Moving to the symptoms related to cancer, at any stage of cancer, whether it's removed from surgery or in place and treated with medicinal therapy, there may be symptoms. And it's very important to let your physician know about this. Now we currently have access to portals where patients can email questions. We see the patients at a frequency. The best approach, I think, is, if you feel there's a medical emergency, obviously call the office. But if symptoms develop, like such as fatigue, swelling on the body, new nausea, vomiting, weight loss, rashes, any particular symptom, I would contact the office to get guidance from the physician. You can use the portal to, engage more with your office. Speak with a physician and their office to see how they use such approaches. In the current state of medicine, at least in the United States, there's also the ability to have your medical record almost in real time. So any test that you get, any scan that you get, and even the doctor's notes may be available for you to read. In my personal opinion, I think this is good because it helps improve the quality of care and gives you insight into your disease. What I prefer my patients to do is, if they have questions, bring those papers, circle what it is they want to talk about, and directly speak about in person. And sometimes within the electronic medical record, there can be some minor errors that we can correct. There can be things that are written in medical terms that might be hard for a patient to understand. Physicians are always happy to sort of understand and deal with that. Finally, when we think about these medications, there can be symptoms beyond the side effects, but there may be financial costs. And know that there are many philanthropic organizations that might help in obtaining funds. There are most definitely at major cancer centers, patients, advocates that help work with pharmaceutical companies to reduce the cost, and even within pharmaceutical companies to reduce costs of these medications. So I think I'm a little over on time. I thank you for your attention, and we'll move on. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Harding. That was an excellent presentation and lots of information. I'm sure there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. And our next speaker is Ms. Diana Bearden, and Ms. Bearden is an oncology dietitian, Michael E. DePake, EVA Medical Center, and she'll be discussing nutrition and hydration concerns and tips. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Bearden.
Thank you, Carolyn. I'm excited to be part of today's presentation. Nutrition and our hydration are essential, not only in your tolerance to treatment, but also to your quality of life. Now, with liver cancer, each patient's unique, each journey's different, but some of the potential side effects you may experience are things like a decreased appetite. You may have some indigestion, abdominal fullness, some nausea, potentially constipation, diarrhea, vomiting, and maybe weight loss. A dietitian is part of your healthcare team and can help provide you information on your individual needs, such as calorie, protein, and fluid needs. They can also help in supporting modifying your diet, giving you suggestions on how to make the most of what you're able to consume and changing things up so that it can work better for you. Typically, with liver cancer, there's a need for increased protein. And so that might be one of the things that your dietitian can talk about with you if that is indeed what you need. But each person responds a little bit differently to treatment. Communicating any changes along the way are very important, and they help us help you better. One of the things that we look to really avoid is unintentional weight loss. We don't want you losing weight unintentionally. Now, I get patients all the time and they say, oh, I could stand to lose some weight, and maybe that's the case. But when you're going through treatment for liver cancer, it's not something that we encourage or recommend. A gradual weight change is okay, but again, individually speaking, you need to talk with your healthcare team about what's best for you. When you don't get enough nutrition and you are losing weight unintentionally, it can impact your treatment. It can cause a delay in treatment. It can cause increased weakness. It can cause loss of muscle mass, which can increase your risk of falls, and it can delay wound healing. Now, some of the things that we've talked about as far as side effects, there are medications for, but as your doctor's talking with you about these medications, make sure you feel comfortable with how to take them, when to take them. If you have any questions, I always recommend patients to have a second set of ears at a visit if they can. Ask for things to be written down so that you can take them home with you. But managing your health is a team effort, and so communicating with your healthcare team helps us help you better. Now, we talk a lot about food and eating and weight maintenance, but hydration sometimes is left off the table. And that's because we get so, you know, focused on one thing sometimes, but hydration is very important. And oftentimes, if you're not eating enough, you're not drinking enough. And dehydration can actually amplify some of the side effects, such as nausea, fatigue, dizziness, weakness. Fluid is anything that's liquid at room temperature, so things like water, milk, juice, sports drinks. In general, most people need between 8 and 10 8-ounce glasses of fluid a day. Now, some treatments can increase your fluid needs, so talking with your healthcare team about your unique needs is so very important. But in closing, there are several members of your team, and we're all here to help you and support you. And so please know how to reach out to us, and please do. The sooner, the better. In closing, I just want to thank you for letting me be part of today's presentation. I'm going to hand the line back over to Carolyn.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Bearden. That was a wonderful presentation. Thank you so much. Very important for our participants today. And our next speaker is Ms. Cassie Spector. And Ms. Spector is an oncology social worker, cancer care, and she'll be addressing communicating with the healthcare team about financial concerns, cancer care's free programs and services, and we'll be giving you information about how to contact cancer care. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Spector.
Thank you, Dr. Mesner. My name is Cassie, and I'm an oncology social worker at cancer care. Cancer care is a national nonprofit organization providing free professional support services and information to help people manage the emotional, practical, and financial challenges of cancer. Our comprehensive services include resource navigation, counseling, support groups, educational workshops, community programs, publications, and limited financial assistance. There are many aspects of a liver cancer diagnosis that may be addressed through our psychosocial support services. Making informed treatment decisions, quality of life concerns, and communication with one's medical team are important topics that can be discussed with an oncology social worker. A cancer diagnosis can be very overwhelming. Additional support and guidance, as well as establishing a supportive network, may help relieve feelings of anxiety related to one's diagnosis. It can be beneficial to determine ways to approach these challenges that may surface. By calling Cancer Care's Hope Line, one of our social workers can help navigate ways to seek support services. Additionally, on Cancer Care's website, there is a wide array of reading material and information related to liver cancer. This includes publications about communication with your medical team and coping with a cancer diagnosis, as well as stories of help and hope through Cancer Care's podcast, Cancer Out Loud. Upcoming and recorded Connect education workshops like this workshop today can be found at org/connect, including several workshops specific to liver cancer. People diagnosed with liver cancer may experience practical and financial concerns through one's treatment. Unfortunately, financial concerns may be a source of continuing stress. When diagnosed and throughout treatment, it may be helpful to discuss any financial or practical concern with your medical providers. Often people are uncomfortable talking with your healthcare team about financial concerns and practical needs. As Dr. Harding mentioned, your healthcare team is very accustomed to these conversations and can help ensure that you have access to treatments that you need. It may be helpful to connect with a social worker, a patient navigator, as well as the financial department at the treatment center to see if there's any financial options available to you. A question you can initially ask your medical team is, who can I talk to about financial assistance, or how much will my treatment cost? Your healthcare team can help provide support with day-to-day concerns so that you will have the best quality of life during treatment. Some practical issues that your healthcare team can assist you with include getting transportation to and from treatment or finding financial help for medications or household bills. Additionally, please know that if you are encountering financial hardships, there are organizations that may be able to assist you. Cancer Care offers resource navigation services offered nationally in English and in Spanish to patients, post-treatment survivors, and caregivers affected by cancer. We offer a short-term, strength-based approach to resource navigation where the social worker or resource navigator will work with the client in connecting them to resources, referrals, and financial assistance. There are also local organizations that can help, so you can visit cancercare.org/helpinghand, and this will guide you to search by zip code and diagnosis to find a list of national and local organizations that can help you. If you are interested in learning more about Cancer Care services, I encourage you to call Cancer Care's National Hope Line at 800-813-4673 to speak with one of our oncology social workers, or you can visit our website at cancercare.org. It's been a pleasure to be part of this very informative program. Thank you for your attention and the opportunity to speak today. I'll turn the program back to Dr. Messner. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Spector. That was a wonderful presentation and lots of really great information for our participants. Thank you so much. I know the questions for you during the Q&A as well. And now we are going to move on to the questions and answers. I'm going to ask Regina to bring all of our speakers on board. I'm going to try to take as many of your questions as possible. Regina.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
So this question is for Dr. Kasib. What are the newest approved therapies, especially after ATEZO/BEV?
Yes, so that's a good question. So since then, we had two more drugs approved just a few months ago with two immunotherapy drugs. And these drugs are durvalumab and tremelimumab, and they are tolerable by patients. It's another option, especially for those patients who cannot handle the Avastin component of Tecentriq Avastin, because Avastin is a drug that targets the blood vessels. So if somebody had recent bleeding, for example, or bad blood pressure that cannot be controlled, or kidney functions that are getting worse, we revert to the immunotherapy only. And these two drugs are another option that actually just got approved a few months ago. And also, the same old drugs, atezolizumab or Tecentriq and bevacizumab or Avastin, what we call, these two drugs are also being investigated after surgery, before surgery, but not approved yet in this indication.
Excellent. Thank you. And this is for Dr. Harding. If you have had liver cancer, are you at higher risk for developing other types of cancers, such as ovarian or kidney cancer? If so, what steps can you take to prevent this from happening?
That's a very good question. You know, there are hereditary cancer syndromes. Typically, liver cancer or hepatocellular carcinoma is not thought to be in that way. It's really a result of chronic inflammation of the liver, which comes from chronic hepatitis C, hepatitis B, alcohol use, or non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. So if one has had liver cancer and that has been removed, there is a risk of developing a recurrence of that liver cancer. And thus, you know, there's a set protocol to follow patients in that space. But in addition, if somebody has had a prior small liver cancer that has been removed and they still have underlying cirrhosis or the risk factor at place, they may be apt to develop another liver cancer, and thus they should be screened accordingly. Typically, liver cancer doesn't you know, lead you to have a greater risk of other tumors. It's the underlying cirrhosis or inflammation of the liver that drives that for the most part. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Harding. And a question for Dr. Kassab. Because the liver is responsible for effectively detoxing the body, does having liver cancer make me more susceptible to other types of infections, such as sepsis?
Yes, that's a great question. So in general, when we have patients with liver cancer, we know that there is some underlying liver disease, such as scarring tissue, which we call cirrhosis. Also, some patients will have pre-existing liver condition, hepatitis B or C or any alcohol damage or fatty liver. So majority of the patients have underlying liver disease already. On top of it, when they develop cancer, that's a space-occupying lesion. It takes up space from the liver, so yes, it makes them more prone to catching infections. Immune system is not going to be as it used to be, so they have a more likelihood of developing infections. Also, some complications related to the underlying liver disease itself, such as varicose veins, you know, in the esophagus or stomach. So they really need a good follow-up with GI doctors, gastrointestinal doctors, and liver doctors for this to rule out any of those complications. Also, they need to have close follow-up with their primary care physicians to make sure they stay up-to-date in terms of preventive and screening services, vaccinations, etc.
Excellent. And another question for you, Dr. Kassab. Can embolization therapy alone be a suitable treatment for liver cancer, or will I also need chemo and radiation?
Patients could go for radioembolization alone if the tumors are not large or spread out, you know, through the liver or outside the liver to necessitate other forms of therapy. So a lot of cases amenable for radioembolization could have radioembolization alone. Exceptions are if the tumor load cannot be included in the radioembolization and also if there are tumors outside the liver. In these cases, patients would need both radioembolization and systemic therapy.
Excellent. Thank you. And Dr. Harding, this question from one of our participants. I used to be so active before my treatment, but post-treatment life has me exhausted. Can you suggest some simple exercises for me to get back in the fitness game?
Well, you know, I think that that's a great question. I think the primary thing to do is actually speak with a primary oncologist that's managing your care to, you know, assure that the feelings that you're having prior, you know, after your treatment are expected. You know, sometimes after a procedure or surgery for liver cancer, it may take several weeks to get back to the full strength. Likewise, if there was a side effect from a medicine, it may take time to recover. But I do think the key elements would be if you're not doing as well as you think you should be, there may be a reason for that your oncologist may have to assess. That might include getting laboratories and seeing the doctor for a better assessment, and they could then go to prescribe what is the necessary course to improve health. Thank you.
Thank you. And for Dr. Kassab, how quickly do I need to decide on a treatment plan for my liver cancer?
Yeah, that's a good question. So while liver cancer is not, you know, lymphoma or leukemia, these tumors grow by the week, almost by the day in certain cases. Liver cancer is not a fast-growing tumor. However, we always advise our patients to seek immediate help because there could be room for surgery or transplant evaluation upfront. So I would say as soon as possible to seek attention by medical oncology team in a multidisciplinary and research center, because this is a tumor that needs a multidisciplinary approach by a medical oncologist, GI, hepatology, surgery, interventional radiology. So these are the 2 points: to seek help as soon as possible and do so at a multidisciplinary care center.
Thank you. This is a question for Dr. Harding, although I'm not sure. This may make more sense to you than it does to me. For OLWFS address bland EMBO, also when was working then fails, do you usually add another systemic or go right to it for mice only?
Sure.
Hard question to understand. It sounds like if regional therapy is failing, what is the next step? I do think it's a conversation with the disease management team at your hospital that can be led by the medical oncologist or hepatologist. If regional therapy is no longer working and there has not been an attempt at systemic therapy, often we consider medicinal therapy, but does require kind of a review by the whole team.
And then the next question is, so would anything be the same for metastases for liver cancer? Dr. Casa, could you address that?
So to understand the question, that means some patients on a specific treatment and then they progress?
It sounds like would they, if they have a basic other type of cancer and metastasizes to the liver, would anything be the same for metastasis?
Got it. No, that's a different kind of cancer, and we get this a lot. So not all liver cancers are the same. The cancer that we call hepatocellular carcinoma is also called primary liver cancer, meaning that it originated in the liver itself. But because the liver is, you know, the filtering station of the body, we do have a lot of tumor types that can metastasize and spread and travel to the liver. So in that case, treatment would be the same treatment of the primary tumor, whether it is coming from the lung or the breast or colon. So patients get the treatment of the original kind of cancer, which started in another organ. So different regimen altogether. While primary liver cancer or hepatocellular carcinoma is a tumor that originated in the liver.
Excellent, thank you. And for Dr. Harding, are there tumor markers that identify liver cancer?
Yeah, so there is one tumor marker that we follow, alpha-fetoprotein. This is not always present in patients with liver cancer and sometimes is only mildly elevated. In patients that do make alpha-fetoprotein, we do tend to follow it. There is exploration on clinical trials using another biomarker called cell-free DNA. That still remains a sort of an immature way to follow the disease. It's not yet fully validated, but there's research happening into that space presently.
Excellent. Thank you. And for Dr. Kasep, can you discuss bland embolization more?
Yes. So bland embolization, meaning that we put a catheter in from the groin, going up like having a heart cath, but we go to the liver. And bland embolization, meaning that we just inject a material to block off the blood vessels and kill the tumor. So we don't inject any chemotherapy. If we do so, it's called TACE, transarterial chemoembolization. We don't inject radiation spheres. If we do so, it's called radioembolization or Y90. So bland embolization is just the same strategy, but not injecting chemo or radiation spheres. We just block off the vessel to kill the tumor without injecting anything like a chemotherapy or radiation. And we do that in select cases where, you know, the tumor is small enough to undergo this procedure and they don't need radiation because either the size or the number of the tumors. So it is one of the approaches we use for liver cancer.
Excellent. Thank you. And for Dr. Harding, if I have chronic hepatitis infections, does this mean I will have liver cancer? And just a general question. For Dr. Harding or for Dr. Kassab?
Sure. So in general, the risk is higher than general population, but it is linked to two main things. Number one, the control of that condition. Let's say, for example, is hepatitis B or C, and the patient got cured from it, or it's alcohol liver damage and the patient stopped drinking, or it is fatty liver and the patient is working on it and decreasing weight and improving control of diabetes and so on. So the underlying liver condition would be linked to the control of the linking process. So I would say, yes, the risk is higher in this situation of developing liver cancer than a general population, but there is always hope that if you can control this underlying condition, you can lower the risk of liver cancer.
Excellent. So this is a question for Dr. Kassab. Are there any supplements or medications that I should take or avoid?
Yeah, so it's a good question. We always get asked that question, and I'm glad that we're discussing it because patients sometimes assume that, you know, if it is natural or over-the-counter, it is safe to use. So we always advise our patients to have this discussion with us. And we do have some databases that we can run the supplement and figure out if it is safe or not. Some supplements are safe to use, some are not. So I would say, depending on the supplement itself, in general, the natural products, vitamins, these things in general could be used, but we have to discuss it with the oncologist because every patient is different. Liver functions is a big factor. Also, what treatment are you receiving is another factor because some treatments could have some drug-drug interaction with some of these supplements.
Excellent. And another question for you, Dr. Kassab. What can I do to stay as healthy as possible during my treatment period, especially during the hot summer months?
Yes, great question. So in general, I advise my patients to stick with good quality of life, meaning eating healthy, high-protein diet, lots of fruits and vegetables. Would be great if they can meet with a dietitian as well. So the dietitian team would give very specific example and list of things they can eat. And in terms of what to avoid, I would always avoid my instruct my patients to avoid taking any concomitant medications or supplements before letting us know, so that way we can check any drug-drug interaction. And also, in general, our patients don't tolerate very well greasy food, fried food, spicy food. These things can make some patients uncomfortable while others can tolerate it. So these are, in general, the things that we encourage our patients to discuss with their team and also meet with our dietitian.
Another question for you, Dr. Kassab. Could you please speak to some complementary and integrative methods that are used in conjunction with conventional treatment to treat liver cancer?
Yeah, so there are some trials looking into natural medicines as immune modulators to see if combining them with local therapy or immunotherapy could synergize the effects of it. Also, some approaches to change the microbiome of the gut, meaning the very tiny organisms in which we have naturally in our gut. If certain medications or certain food supplements can help change it to a favorable microbiome, and in that case could help treatment. But I always tell my patients, don't do this on your own, because there are some conflicting data about that. That's why we always advise, the general advice is eating healthy, exercising 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week. That's what you can do on your own. And if you want to take a step further and look into any other supplement, then we have to discuss it in clinic to make sure that it's not going to interact with what we're doing.
Another question for you, Dr. Kassab. I was recently diagnosed with liver cancer and need a liver transplant. What can I do to help myself while on the liver transplant waiting list?
Yes, that's a great question. So in general, consider liver transplant surgery as, you know, a major, major surgery. Takes sometimes up to 10, 12 hours, so the body has to be ready for it. So in general, we like patients to be in good shape in terms of their nutrition, their functional status, their support system, because after transplant, there's going to be initially at least some time where patients could need help from around them in terms of family and friends, support groups, and also the immune system is going to be low. So they have to be in good shape nutritionally and functionally as well. So these are the things that patients can do on their own to prep them for the liver transplant, the surgery itself, and what comes afterwards.
Excellent. Are there questions that you're frequently asked, Dr. Kassab, about a liver transplant that you'd like to share with, well, actually with liver cancer treatment, the transplant, but liver cancer treatment that you'd like to share, just frequently asked questions that you get from patients.
Sure. So in general, you know, patients like to get the most updated treatment with the highest response rate and so on. And sometimes because the liver malfunction, the underlying liver cirrhosis or the scarring tissue, if we start with poor liver functions, patients have some jaundice in their eyes, for example, then we try to go for less hectic treatment options. So I would say I've had some patients actually who responded very, very well to just single agent immunotherapy while we thought initially that they may benefit from two drugs rather than one, but we did only one drug because their liver function was not optimal and we had excellent results with one drug alone. So I would say to our patients who are listening to us and their families, don't be discouraged if your liver function status is not optimal to go with the most aggressive therapy, because guess what? We've had some patients who responded very well to just single agent drugs, and we always take these decisions in a multidisciplinary manner. And the fact that you go online and you read some papers about which regimen is most effective doesn't mean it applies to everyone. Some patients do very poorly on these drugs, and some patients do much better on other less hectic drugs, single agent drugs that have even lower response rate, but for them it worked. So that's why I always tell my patients, just talk to your primary team about what's best for you at that moment, and you would never know, maybe that's enough for you.
Excellent. And question for Dr. Harding. My doctor said I have secondary liver cancer. Is the treatment plan the same as primary liver cancer?
So I think that requires sort of clarification with your physician. You know, usually people refer to secondary liver cancer. So primary liver cancer is the liver, the cancer generated from the liver cell, the hepatocyte. That's generally referred to as primary liver cancer, and it generates within the liver. It is a cancer of the liver, a primary cancer of the liver. Secondary tumors of the liver are generally metastasis, meaning that it's spread from somewhere else in the body, and that is treated differently. Sometimes it's impossible to tell where a cancer started and may just be in the liver, and that is a complex discussion. So it may not be the same, no.
Excellent, thank you. And Dr. Kassab, this will be our last question. Is it true that children can sometimes contract hepatitis B infection from prolonged contact with family members who are infected? Should I worry about my children getting liver cancer?
So hepatitis B could be transmitted mainly through blood. So patients who get, you know, either blood transfusion or open wound, you know, getting exposure to products that were contaminated with hepatitis B. So in general, we advise our patients with family members with known history of hepatitis B to get vaccinated for hepatitis B, and also to know the best preventive measures, not to share razors, for example. All of these things are very, very general but very critical methods to avoid getting infected from a household member. So the key is the family member with hepatitis B to get treated, the one without to get vaccinated, and then to understand the preventive services to avoid any kind of contamination and eventually infection.
Excellent. And I'm going to ask each of our speakers to just provide a takeaway from today's program. I'll start with Dr. Kassab, then Dr. Harding, then and then Ms. Spector. So Dr. Kassab, do you want to go first? Just a takeaway from today's program.
Sure. So it's always very, very important for us to show our patients and their families around the globe how we manage this disease, the importance of having the treatment at a multidisciplinary center. And this call is a perfect example of that. You know, you have multidisciplinary team here of physicians, social workers, dietitians. So this is how we manage this disease because it is a complicated situation. Most patients have cancer plus some underlying liver disease, so you really need all hands on deck. So I would say seek care at a multidisciplinary center to get the benefit of this consensus and multidisciplinary management.
Excellent, thank you. And Dr. Harding?
Yeah, I second that. Multidisciplinary care at an expert center is critical. The field's moving very quickly with a number of immune-based therapy options, as well as moving this to earlier stages of disease, and it's best to be kept informed via those centers and other advocacy groups. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks so much. And Ms. Spector?
Yeah, thank you. Just that really a cancer diagnosis can be so overwhelming just with the practical, emotional, or financial impacts that it's having on you. Just know that there is support available to you through cancer care, other organizations, and through your medical team. So don't be hesitant to reach out for support if you do need that.
Well, I just want to thank all of our speakers. You've been phenomenal. And I want to thank our participants, really, for asking such great questions. Although we've done this program before, I think the questions today have been even more incredible than ever before. So speakers and the participants together, that wonderful interaction has been hopefully very helpful to all of you on this call today. I also want to acknowledge that there are many more questions in queue. We can't, of course, take all the questions in queue. So for those of you who either asked a question or have a question in queue or are thinking of another question, please go back to your healthcare team. They, of course, know you the best, and they will be able to look at your healthcare. They know your records and everything about you, and they can then customize their answer to you. And I think a number of our speakers have said that's really important. And be sure that you've learned something today, and so that when you go back, you'll probably feel more confident in asking your question. Ask it as often as you need to until you get the answers that you need for the care that you need. Also, I think as Ms. Spector said, we don't want anyone to feel alone in coping with liver cancer, any type of cancer. We want you to know that you're not part of a community of support. We're here to help you. You can contact Cancer Care. In a couple of days, you'll be getting a SurveyMonkey evaluation, and in that evaluation, there's an evaluation of the program, which we appreciate your filling out. But there also will be listed all the any of the websites or 800 numbers that we provided, any other information that we think would be helpful for you to have as you cope with liver cancer, any type of cancer. Again, I want to thank you all for your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.